Good morning, and welcome to the May 27th, 2026 edition of Southern Champaign County Today. My name is Lori Talkington for the Illinois Radio Reader, and today's date is, in fact, Thursday, May 28th, 2026. As the Unit 7 schools wrapped up their spring semester and sent students out for their summer break, Unity West Principal Darren O'Connell summed up his feelings with the following statement. "We had a really good school year for 2025-26. Many new initiatives were started, such as positive referrals, staff shout-outs, student of the quarter, Rocket Lunch for parents, social media recognitions, the Rocket Brew Crew, and the West Cares program. Staff and students worked hard to achieve new goals set throughout the year. Fun Fridays with bubbles and music let students smile, laugh, and jump for joy, as well as the excitement felt on the last day of school with the inflatables and local first responders giving kids a chance to experience their vehicles in front of the school as they then rotated around to the Touch a Truck station. Everyone is looking forward to even more progress in the upcoming 26-27 school year, with registration happening in August. Until then, on behalf of the Unit 7 schools, I wish everyone a safe and happy summer break." Jumping right into our community news, we'll hear from the Tolono Historical Society and Veterans Museum. They presented speaker Jane Faust with her Saved by the Bell talk at the Tolono Public Library on Wednesday, May 20th. Several participants brought their own bells and shared stories about how they touched their lives. Small bells were handed out to remind everyone about the 13 chimes that they can ring out at 1 p.m. Central Time on July 4th, Independence Day, that was proclaimed by John F. Kennedy in 1963 with his National Bell Ringing Day Declaration for the 4th of July. The Tolono Historical Society and Veterans Museum told those gathered for the coffee talk that they were welcome to come to their building across from the Tolono Post Office at 101 East Holden and ring bells together. The meeting, the second Friday of the month, will have members and those interested in becoming members gathering on June 12th at 9:30 a.m., and one of the topics on the agenda will be the Tolono Fun Day plans, which will take place during the parade on Saturday, June 27th. Those who like to view the parade from that location are also welcome to explore their exhibits during their open house. 8-passenger golf carts will be available to haul members who plan to participate in the parade as grand marshals. Those interested in supporting the Tolono Historical Society and Veterans Museum can find information or message them on Facebook, where gratitude was recently expressed to those who came to Tolono cemeteries to help plant flags near the graves of fallen soldiers for Memorial Day. Next, we have news from the Sydney American Legion Post 433. American Legion Post Finance Officer Susan Mantell reported that she will be attending a 6 p.m. Champaign County Veterans Assistance Commission meeting at the Bennett Administrative Center in Urbana on June 10th. Post Adjutant Bill McLean reported that more poppies will be needed for next year's poppy distribution for the Legion's Poppy Distribution Day. Bill McLean also reported that the post has 45 members under membership. Regarding the recent poppy distribution, the post brought in $3,600 overall so far in donations from the poppy distribution that took place at the Casey's General Store in Philo and Sydney and the Philo Dollar General and Lowe's Improvement Store on North Prospect in Champaign. Commander Hench went on to report that they have one more poppy distribution yet to attend, as the Legion will participate with WDWS, WHMS, WKIO, The Rooster, The News Gazette, the CIMG Champaign County, Central Illinois Media Group, and the Champaign County American Legion Post poppy distribution drives, which took place on Thursday, May 21st, in the Central Illinois Media Group parking lot on Fox Drive in Champaign. Post Vice President Glenn Dillman will distribute poppies at the event from 6 to 8 a.m. The Legion will also put out American flags at the Mount Hope Cemetery in Sydney on Wednesday, May 20th, and Bill McLean and Susan McLean will see that the flags get placed at the Lynn Grove Cemetery as well. A lengthy discussion concerning the Mount Hope Cemetery Memorial Day celebration took place, and it was reported that Jim Wood fired his cannon at the event. Pastor Doug Krukwit of the Sydney Christian Church was the guest speaker. Attendees also decided that they needed to meet ahead of the program and discussed how many chairs were needed, inviting the Sydney Board of Trustees use their sound system and music for the program. The Post will host an American flag retirement ceremony on Flag Day on Sunday, June 14th at 5 p.m. The Sydney American Legion Post will also be used during the Sydney Fun Days Parade on Saturday, July 25th, and Jerry Akers volunteered that his truck could be used for the Fun Days Parade. The Legion also decided to run a meat raffle again at their April 20th meeting. Bill McLean contacted Tim Osterber, who printed up tickets for them that were ready to be handed out. There are 750 tickets to sell at $10 per book at 10 tickets per book for a $10 ticket. The meat that will be raffled will be beef, and the winner will be announced at the end of the Saturday, July 25th, Sydney Fun Days Car Show. And the winner can choose whether to take the meat itself or a cash gift. The Legion also discussed their upcoming elections for new officers, and Post historian Rollo Ketter Henry will come up with a slate of officers that was presented for a vote on the Monday, May 18th meeting. The slate included all of the officers from the previous year, and the nominating committee recommended to continue with them with the 2025-26 officers for the 26-27 year. The motion was approved, and the new officers will be invested at a future meeting. The closing ceremonies took place, and the meeting was adjourned. Let's focus next on what's happening in the night sky, courtesy of David Leakey, former director of the planetarium at Parkland College. And he begins, "Yes, I know, I keep writing about the planets in the western sky, and I'm going to start this column with that focus once more. It gets interesting in the next week as Venus gains more altitude, approaching Jupiter. Tonight, the two planets make a nice triangle with the star Procyon to the left of the pair. By next week, Venus and Jupiter are nearly side by side, with Venus the brighter of the two. Mercury is below and to the right. The planets are closest on the evening of June 7th, when they'll be a bit more than 2 degrees in separation. What a fantastic view. And above are the stars Castor and Pollux, mocking the planets, but at nearly double the separation. Mercury tries to keep up, but on the 13th of June, it'll give up and head back sunward, while Venus and Jupiter flip-flop their spots in the western sky. On May 31st, the night of a full moon, Venus reaches its greatest altitude. By the way, that full moon is the second one of the month of May, which some have called a blue moon. But of course, in reality, the moon really won't turn blue. Next up, we have our weekly report from the Tolono Public Library, which has announced that summer reading has bloomed. You are officially invited to the Tolono Public Library's Summer Reading Program kickoff party on Saturday, May 30th, from 11:30 to 1:30. Our theme this year is Plant a Seed and Read. This theme is rooted in the concept of farm to table. A farm grows food that nourishes our bodies. A library grows ideas that nourish our minds. Both food and stories connect us to our family, our culture, our economy, and our ecology. This summer, explore culture, history, science, health, and human connections with the Tolono Public Library District. While you do not need to be present at the party to sign up to participate in the summer reading program, which you can do through the Beanstack app at any time, if you come on kickoff day, you'll be immersed in a flurry of celebration that comes with the freedom of summer and an opportunity to try your hand at several new crafts and activities. Anyone who signs up for the summer reading program, which runs until August 1st, will receive a sign-up prize, but the first 100 people to sign up and attend the kickoff party will receive a scoop of ice cream from the Main Scoop ice cream truck, which will be on site that day, courtesy of the Friends of the Tolono Library. Once you're signed up and have received your treat, you can choose your own adventure. We'll be making bean art and bead plants in the meeting room. Vase painting and flower petal decorating will be taking place near the circulation desk. There will be photo backdrop with balloon arch for pictures, and once all of that is done, grab a booklet to complete the specially made scavenger hunt. Don't forget to step outside to see our newly planted community garden. The Friends of the Tolono Library will also be at the kickoff party selling mini planters in their continued effort to raise funds for the library so that we can continue putting on fun programs such as this one. Once again, it's Saturday, May 30th from 11:30 in the morning until 1:30 in the afternoon. For more information on our summer reading program, along with a link to the Beanstack and a list of prizes that can be won throughout the challenge, visit our website, which is simply tolonolibrary.org. Tolono Library is all one word. We will also have several other programs happening in the coming weeks at the library. They include Gardening for Kids, LKBC, Cuddling Connect, and Coffee Talk with Heather Roberts from Ameren on severe weather preparedness. For information on all of these events and more, once again, check our website, tolonolibrary.org, and you can check for links to events or stop into the library and grab a calendar for yourself. And now let's jump over to Philo for their weekly library news. And they begin by asking if we had a good Memorial Day weekend. We sure hope you did, and that the kids are not yet bored with summer. I asked one of our after-school kids last Thursday when their school let out and was told on Friday. I guess it's time for us to shift gears to summer mode. A reminder that Tuesday night, June 2nd, is our Bring Your Own Book Club from 6 to 7 p.m. Everybody is invited to come and talk about books. Our summer programs officially start next week. Tuesday, June 2nd, from 1 to 2 p.m., come and read with the dogs. Actual reading is for kids from kindergarten through 4th or 5th grades. Younger kids are welcome to sit near the dogs and listen to stories with them. I hope we have a great turnout. These dogs look adorable. June 3rd is the first Champaign County Forest Preserve presentation at the library from 1:30 to 2:30 p.m. It's open to everyone. Come and see what interactive nature programs that the Champaign County Forest Preserve has put together for us. Most of the new books we received this past week are large print editions. They include The Easter Egg Murder by Leslie Meyer, Jane Harper's Last One Out, which takes place in an old mining town in New South Wales, Australia, The Mountains We Call Home, The Bookwoman's Legacy, is set in Kentucky. It's infused with hope, spirit, and courage, and it's a book well worth reading. Mary Alice Monroe is our Southern writer for today. Where the Rivers Merge spans generations of a family in South Carolina from 1908 to 1988. It's a story of a woman determined to persevere. One more new large print book coming our way is The Midnight Train, which is an adventure through time, a novel of wonder and transformation, a story of love and second chances. And in regular print edition, we now have Nora Roberts' Final Target. It's a chilling tale. Come and find out for yourself. Hope you'll check back next week when we'll have more books, more news and information on programs for the week of June 7th to the 14th, and other news. Until then, as always, thanks for reading. Today's article from Kurt Foster in our column, Ramblings from the Village Idiot, is particularly important today. He begins, "Between last year's drought and the extreme swings in temperature over the winter, a lot of my plants, wildflowers mostly, perished. Some may have become diseased and were unable to fight back due to the weather stress. Boo-hoo. It's just some of one man's gardening efforts coming to naught. But across the Great Plains, the drought and wildly gyrating winter temperatures have greatly reduced the winter wheat crop. This year's harvest, beginning in Texas right about now and moving north until it's finished in July, will be 25% lower than last year. The harvest of hard red winter wheat will be the lowest since 1957. So, our daily bread may be in short supply next year. Besides the weather, farmers are facing other challenges, which are the direct result of policy decisions of the current administration. Our war with Iran has caused fuel prices to jump. It has also caused the price of nitrogen-based fertilizers to jump. These prices won't come back down until commercial shipping through the Strait of Hormuz returns to pre-war levels, with a realistic prospect of staying there for some time. Meanwhile, the price of phosphate fertilizer, which largely comes from Canada, is artificially high due to tariffs imposed by the administration, and which are likely to go even higher. These tariffs were applied during the 45th, the first Trump administration, and are likely to go even higher during the current administration. As one Texas wheat farmer put it, "There's fuel, there's drought, there's fertilizers. I've got three strikes against me. Am I out?" At this point, many farmers would spend much more money harvesting than they could ever get for their crops. The best they can hope for is to have their winter wheat crops declared a total loss. Drawing down the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to 1982 levels has not helped. Suspending the motor fuel tax would not help much either. It's about 18 cents a gallon for gasoline, 24 cents a gallon for diesel. And it does not apply to fuels used by farmers. Suspending the tax would, however, mean little less money to fix highways. Floating the prospect of producing more fertilizer domestically someday isn't going to affect decisions that our farmers have to make for the next few years at least. And I doubt that we could ever compete on price with nitrogen fertilizer produced in the Middle East. A principal raw material for producing nitrogen-based fertilizer is natural gas. The Middle East has the largest producing gas fields on the planet. The U.S. produces a lot of natural gas, it is true, but we are already using it for home heating and generating electricity, or we are exporting it. Allowing year-round sale of E15, which is gas with 15% ethanol, would mean a larger domestic market for corn, courtesy of taxpayers. That might help some of our corn growers, but really wouldn't help the fuel situation. Turning corn into ethanol burns a lot of fuel, and there are a lot of engines in use, for example, the one on my own lawnmower. That won't take anything more than E10, which is 10% ethanol in the gas. And even for engines designed to burn anything from pure gasoline to pure ethanol, there's a price to pay. Burning a gallon of ethanol produces only about two-thirds as much energy as burning a gallon of gas. So the higher the E number, the lower your miles per gallon will be. The E85 currently being touted will reduce your miles per gallon by nearly 30% compared to using pure gasoline. On the bright side, this year, my wildflowers are coming back, the hummingbirds are going for my penstemons, and so are the bees, which are also going for the white clover, which started blooming a month early this year, and also for the common milkweed, which is just starting to bloom. The butterfly weed is very close to opening. My other prairie plants and western wildflowers are on the way, as are the sunflowers, and the ornamental annuals like zinnias and cosmos. All these happy little pollinators play a vital role in producing fruit, nuts, and vegetables. And with the precipitous decline in commercial honeybee colonies and the impending closure of the USDA's Beltsville Agricultural Research Center, including the nation's longest operating bee laboratory, our non-native honeybees may become unable to get the job done. One way to mitigate this disaster is to support our beleaguered native honeybees. Hopefully, our neighborhood garden efforts will help. Maybe others will want to help as well. This week's column from Capital News Illinois notes that we in Illinois grow millions of bushels of soybeans. But why aren't we eating them? And they note that more local infrastructure is urgently needed for our own crops, especially soybeans, to make it from our farms to our tables. Inside a factory on Chicago's north side, the smell of simmering soybeans drifts through the air. On a typical day, I use about 4,000 pounds of dried beans, said Jenny Yang. She and her team grind, cook, and press thousands of pounds of soybeans into silky tofu and rich soy milk, the taste of home for Yang and for many who grew up with tofu on the table. She still makes it the same way, no preservatives but made mostly by hand, said Bob Lum, a longtime friend of Yang's who helps with the business. Her company, Phoenix Bean, has been making tofu and soy milk this way since she bought it in 2006. It's one of the few businesses in the state that uses Illinois food-grade, non-GMO, non-genetically modified organism soybeans sourced directly from local farms like Janie's Mill in Ashcombe. I've known them since back in the day, like at least 10 to 15 years, Yang said. This is a very good partnership. Illinois grows more soybeans than any other state, harvesting more than 639 million bushels in 2025, well ahead of Iowa's 595 million bushels and Minnesota's 371 million bushels. Lawmakers designated the soybean as the official state bean in 2025. With Senator Doris Turner of Springfield, who chairs the State Agriculture Committee, calling Decatur the soybean capital of the world. But almost none of those millions of bushels of soybeans end up as food on Illinois plates. According to the Illinois Soybean Association, 60% of the soybeans grown in the state are exported. Most of the remaining 40% are processed as animal feed, leaving the state reliant on imports for its soy food. 95% of food consumed in the state of Illinois is imported, said Representative Sonia Harper, D. Chicago, who is chair of the House Agriculture and Conservation Committee. If there were any type of natural disaster, Illinois only has enough food that will last us for 3 days. In 2025, with a trade war freezing exports to China, one of the biggest buyers of Illinois soybeans, Governor J.B. Pritzker declared an agricultural export crisis and directed state agencies to enhance domestic markets. For farmers and food producers, the pressure has made the need for local infrastructure more urgent than ever, raising the question of whether more of Illinois' own crops, especially soybeans, can start feeding more Illinoisans. Harper said more effort and massive investment are needed. She sponsored the Local Food Infrastructure Grant Program, which provides local farmers with small grants for processing, storage, and distribution. She worked closely with the Illinois Stewardship Alliance, a policy advocate for local food and farm communities, to build legislative momentum. We have some of the best soil and the best farmland, Harper said. No matter where you are, urban, suburban, or rural, we need to be producing more food in our state. She described local food production as a win-win that will help create jobs and generate revenue. Her downstate colleague, Representative Charlie Meyer of Okawville, a farmer himself who raises about 1,000 acres of soybeans per year, noted that farmers follow price signals. We're very conservative and we do everything the same, Meyer said. But at the same time, we must be able to change everything in the drop of a hat, and we will go wherever the markets are. For Illinois farmers, the math is brutal. Food-grade soybeans require older genetics that yield 10 to 15 fewer bushels per acre. Jeff O'Connor, a northern Illinois farmer who has grown food-grade soybeans, said his commodity soybeans averaged in the low 70 bushels per acre last year. His food-grade soybeans, which use varieties more than a decade old, yield in the low 60 bushels per acre. You can't do that again, one landowner told O'Connor after a season of raising food-grade soybeans. I don't care if we made a little more money. They looked terrible. And that's the consensus of farmers across the state. More infrastructure is needed in order to use the best strains to grow the best soybeans. This concludes our reading of the May 27th edition of Southern Champaign County Today. My name is Lori Talkington for the Illinois Radio Reader, and I invite you to join us again next week. Lori Talkington for the Illinois Radio Reader, and I invite you to join us again next week.